Hello and welcome to the Full of Beans podcast, hosted by myself, Hannah Hickenbotham. Throughout these podcast episodes, we will speak to a range of individuals about their experience of eating disorders, with the aim of increasing awareness and understanding whilst reducing stigma and isolation. Please note that the topics discussed in this podcast may be triggering for some individuals, so tread lightly, check in with yourself, and reflect on these conversations. This week I'm joined by Mia Morgan. Mia is a final year PhD candidate at the University of Derby, researching how nature connectedness can benefit people with disordered eating. Her project involves developing the first nature-based intervention tailored to this group, in collaboration with those with lived experience. With a background in psychology and experience as a support worker on an eating disorder inpatient unit, Mia is passionate about creating accessible, holistic interventions, especially harnessing the power of nature for mental health. Hi Mia, it's so nice to have you on the podcast. How are you doing today?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. I'm really excited to be here. As I said, I've just been in a big deadline, so it feels nice just to like pause and have a chat about everything I've done on my project so far. So yeah, really excited for today.
Amazing. Yeah, and I'm super excited to speak to you as well, because it's funny, like when we first spoke about this, I was like, oh yeah, nature and eating disorders, like I'm sure there's a link. And then I went to Yosemite and was hiking for 3 weeks. I was like, I now need to speak to Mia, because like, oh, I get what she was talking about.
Yeah, well that's like nature on an absolute like amazing magnitude. So yeah, oh, that sounds incredible. I'm very jealous. Yeah.
Amazing. So for the listeners, would you like to introduce yourself and tell us a bit about what you do?
Yeah, sure. My name's Mia. I'm a final year now, which is scary to say, PhD student at the University of Derby. And my project is all around exploring how nature, and specifically nature connectedness, which we can probably talk a bit about what that is, can help people experiencing disordered eating, and then use all of that information to then create a specific nature connectedness intervention for people with disordered eating. And that's been done in collaboration with people with lived experience, and other key individuals as well. So yeah, it's been a really fun project so far.
Yeah, no, that sounds great. And I love the fact that you kind of highlighted there that you've had people with lived experience involved, because I think it's so important, particularly when, you know, we're thinking about new strategies of supporting people with eating disorders. Like, it's no good designing something if you don't get people that are struggling actually involved with it.
Yeah, that's something like I'm so, so passionate about. And when I sort of came into the project was already set up, but I was very much like, I want this to be driven by the lived experience voice. If I'm going to do this, like I'm going to have, that's going to be the focus. And yeah, exactly. It's so important. Like it needs to be part of the process naturally of intervention development. I think we're getting there with recognizing that, but yeah, I feel thankful that I've had the opportunity to actually put that into practice in this project. It's been brilliant.
Amazing. And before we get into your project and the things that you found and stuff, what was it that inspired you to initially look into this as a project idea?
It was kind of like a stars align moment, really, but it was brilliant. So I mean, I've always known since my undergraduate in psychology that I wanted to get into research into eating disorders. I knew that because my best friend at uni sort of suffered with an eating disorder while we were going through uni. And I was like, right, this is exactly what I want to get into, like improving services, improving care around this. And then I worked on an inpatient ward as well as a support worker in an eating disorder inpatient unit. And that like sparked my interest even more, like, no, this is my calling. Like, this is what I want to sort of dedicate my career to. And then I was working at Oxford NHS. So I was working across Oxford NHS and the University of Oxford as a research assistant. And I was put on this project around evaluating some training that an organisation called NatureWell were delivering. Staff in a CAMS ward in Oxford NHS, around sort of implementing nature connectedness strategies into practice, so into the ward's daily life essentially. And up until this point, I'd never heard of nature connectedness. I was like most people, I was really aware of sort of the benefits of nature on our mental health. At this point, I think it was the tail end of COVID, so I was at that heightened stage of realizing how important nature was, because obviously it was basically all we had during that time. So it was like I was really tuned into it, but I didn't realize sort of this whole scope of research around nature connectedness and sort of the specific benefits it could have for well-being over and above sort of spending time in nature. So I was really intrigued by this, and like I was like, yes, this needs to be brought into services more in mental health settings. Like, it's absolutely crucial. So I was on that project, and then I saw a PhD project come up by a lady at the University of Derby who I was also already working with on another paper. And it was literally to create a nature connectedness intervention for people with disordered eating. And I was like, oh my God, is this is made for me, this project. So yeah, that's how I got into it. And yeah, now I sit within sort of the nature connectedness research group at the University of Derby, which is led by Miles Richardson, who's my supervisor, and who does all of this amazing research around sort of the specific benefits of nature connectedness. And I've come to realise throughout the project sort of the specific benefits it has for people with eating disorders. And yeah, I think I sort of come to realise as well how important it is that we're really thinking about sort of sustainable approaches, not for any mental health illness, but specifically for eating disorders as well, that we really are tapping into those accessible ways that people can help themselves and take control over their recovery, and have these ways that, yeah, that they can really feel like they are empowered and they have the resources to take care of themselves. And nature is such a constant, and that's what's so good about it. It's always there and you can always access it in some way or another. So it just felt like, yeah, perfect project.
Yeah, and you're so right in terms of like it always being there, because like, yeah, during COVID it was the one thing that we had, you know. Yeah, we all knew, even though sometimes we were limited on how long we were allowed outside, we knew that we were allowed to be outside for a certain period of the day. And actually the impact of not going outside, like I am very keen on every day having a half an hour walk on my lunch break just to break the day. And my partner doesn't have that routine in his life. Yeah. And I think we got to day six and he'd not been outdoors. And I was you need to go outside. Like, just look at the sun. Just go look at a cloud. Like, do something. Because even that was, like, shocking for the fact that he'd kind of been stuck inside.
Yeah.
So absolutely, like, you know, just even getting outside for your mental health is so important.
Yeah. Yeah, and it doesn't even need to be a long amount of time. It doesn't even need to be a walk. It can literally be stepping outside your door, engaging with the sound of the birds, just feeling the wind on your face, just something for a couple of minutes can just transform how you're feeling. It's vital, I think, for our mental well-being, definitely.
Absolutely, yeah. And you used the term nature connectedness. I just was wondering what that means.
Yeah. So nature connectedness is actually a psychological construct that refers to our relationship with nature. So it's very much going beyond just simply spending time in nature to actually fostering a relationship with nature. And that can sound a bit woo-woo. And I think when I first got introduced to this, I was like, oh, nature connectedness, that does sound very out there and hippie. But there is so much research behind actually how we spend time in nature. So noticing nature, engaging with nature is so much more important. Obviously spending time in nature is very important, but it goes that extra step for our well-being. So it's about feeling an emotional connection with nature and a sense of belonging in nature. And there's a framework that's been developed at the University of Derby, which I'm very much adopted throughout my project and my sort of intervention design. And it's called the 5 pathways to nature connection. So these are literally 5 simple ways that people can build their connection with nature in their daily lives. And they're so, so simple. So the first one is connecting with nature using the 5 senses. So kind of what we were just talking about then, literally stepping outside and listening to the birds, smelling flowers, whatever it might be. But just having that engagement in nature and really noticing nature. There's beauty, so really appreciating nature's beauty and sort of tuning into that more, whether it be taking a photograph of nature or maybe using it in creative ways if that's what you're into, but really just noticing the beauty in nature. Emotion, which is really noticing how nature makes you feel. So whether that be calm or excited, all different emotions, but really taking a step back and starting to tune into how it makes you feel. Compassion is looking after nature, so that might be having take it if you're into gardening, or even having a potted plant in your house, or it could be looking after animals, creating sort of habitat for wildlife. And then meaning is the final one, which is really understanding what nature means to you, how it plays a part in your life, using natural symbolism, so metaphors, and I can talk a bit later about how specifically that can help people with disordered eating, because that's been really interesting. But these are five really simple ways that can allow people to engage with nature and foster that connection. So yeah, it is very different to stepping outside and going on a walk. It's going a step further and building that relationship.
Yeah, it really is, because when you said, like, sorry, I can't remember what you referred it to, but it was five something, and
the
I was
five,
like,
well, pathways.
The five pathways. I was like, that's obviously going to be looking, hearing, seeing, and yeah. then you're like, you know, all these other things, like finding connection and finding meaning, and actually that's so lovely, and it makes so much sense, because it isn't just, you know, how you see nature or what you hear or whatever, it's your connection to it. So yeah. It absolutely makes so much sense to have all those other things as well. And is there one that's stronger than the other, or, you know, the more you do, does it get stronger, or have you looked into that at all?
Yeah, so, well, in my first study, so part of the intervention and development was interviewing people with lived experience, and I actually asked people about these five paths. So I asked people generally, like, how did nature help you during when you're recovering from your disordered eating? But I also asked about these five pathways, because I was aware that these had been sort of created with the general population. I was really interested to see actually how does this relate to specific populations, and obviously my project is about people with disordered eating, so that population. And it was really interesting, because I think two came out the most. So senses came out really strongly, but it was interesting to see actually that it came that people spoke about the senses before I actually brought the pathways up. So I feel like this is naturally, I guess we started talking about it first, didn't we? And it's almost like the senses is sort of the foundation for the other ones. There's been no specific research look at this, but what I mean has come from mine. It seems that this is what people go to first, maybe because it feels the most accessible, maybe the most passive. The other ones, like compassion, are quite like active. You need to get quite stuck in, whereas these are quite simple things you can do. So they feel quite accessible. And I guess, yeah, they are the underlying of all the other ones. And the other one that came up a lot in the interviews was compassion. And I think specifically for people when they're experiencing eating disorders, is that looking after something else and putting the focus onto something else and having a purpose outside of their disordered eating and their disordered eating behaviors really can make people step outside. So for this population specifically, those were the two that really came up. The others did as well, but it was interesting to see those two were quite prominent.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting what you just said about having a purpose, because I can completely relate to that. I mean, I have lots of houseplants myself, but I guess when we're talking about nature, we're not just talking about plants, we're talking about animals and wildlife as well. And in, I guess, a similar respect, my cat is a house cat, so they're definitely not within nature. But I found, you know, through my own recovery, when I knew that I needed to look after them, that meant you know, for such a while, it was like, honey, you need to get better, because if you don't, you can't look after them. And that was like a real driving factor for me. And I kind of would giggle to myself sometimes, be like, oh my God, I'm recovering from my eating disorder for my cats. But actually, you know, if there's something that is motivating you to get better so that you can look after it, or it acts as a distraction, or maybe the act of giving something else compassion makes you realize actually you're quite a caring person and deserve compassion yourself.
Yeah.
That's so powerful in recovery.
Absolutely, yeah, all those things that you've just said are things that came up in the interviews. Exactly, like feeling like I need to show up for this other thing today, whatever that might be, whatever, even if that is just to water your potted plant, just to have an act of, okay, this complete focus isn't on me and I'm responsible for something else and something's reliant on me, not in like a pressurizing way, but just to have that act of there is something else in my life right now can be really powerful. And I think the good thing about nature is that can be quite small, and it might not feel so all consuming. It can be something as simple as going out and watering your garden in the day, which can also have sort of other benefits as well on your mental health, but it pushes you maybe just take a step outside. I think it is brilliant for that, and brilliant for that creating purpose outside. And that actually came up as well within sort of having this greater meaning in life. So a lot of people spoke about actually when they were experiencing their disordered eating, a lot of their meaning in life was their disordered eating, and that actually connecting with nature can be a way to foster another sense of meaning in life, whether that is with your plant or with an animal, but even on a greater sense when you start to feel that connection with nature. Some people said that it does feel like a spiritual practice. It is some people's version of that type of thing, and it can really foster that meaning and connection that people need at that time outside of what they're going through. So I think it's so powerful on so many different levels.
It's really interesting, because I think, I mean, I've always kind of recognised the importance of nature, but I think, and like you said, like Yosemite is literally like the pinnacle of nature. It's like nature 2.0. But it was really interesting for me, because I always have such a loud, noisy mind. And when we were going through the hikes, for me, I always also have ADHD. And so I think that's what also creates noise in my head. And so being within nature, like every sensory experience was being satisfied, like what I was seeing, what I was hearing, the way that I was moving and stuff like that. And I like would always say to my partner, if we're like on a walk or something and we're quiet, I'm like, oh, what are you thinking about? And sometimes he'll be like, nothing. And I'm like, how? Like, that's not possible. And I was thinking of nothing. And I was like walking around like, what is going on right now? This is amazing. It's so powerful. But I guess a question that I have is, you know, not everybody, unfortunately, has access to Yosemite every day. So what did you find through your research, like what kind of, because you said, you know, it's accessible to everybody and there's like simple things everyone can do. Do you have any examples of them?
Yeah. So one thing that I really wanted this intervention to be was accessible. So I was really in the interviews trying to understand ways that people were tuning into nature in their everyday lives, because I am very aware that people have such varying access to nature, and that shouldn't be a barrier to it being used. Like, the most simplest things can be done. So even people were talking about during when they were in sort of inpatient units, that they simply just looking outside of their window and connecting with the senses, like you've just said, is almost a way to regulate your emotions. So emotional regulation has come up as quite a big benefit throughout my project from previous literature, but also, as I said, the interviews that I've done, and I also did focus groups with disordered eating professionals as well. And emotional regulation has come up as a really big one, and you've really just touched on that with what you were saying there. And it made me really emotional actually to hear people speak about how when they were in natural spaces, or even just like we said, engaging in the simplest way, whether it's looking out your window or whether it's putting sort of audio on and listening to birds, there's like playlists on Spotify, visualizations, a lot of professionals do that type of thing with people, and that can quieten that voice, that constant all-consuming voice in people's heads. And I think to get to that point during that time is so unbelievably powerful, because people said it gave me a respite, but it also allowed me to realize that there was something else that I could experience than other than this all-consuming negativity. And I think just to be able to pause, whether it's 5 minutes a day by engaging with your senses and just have that break from that voice is powerful enough. But then people were also speaking about sort of how that made them feel very calm and how those two things are linked. But sorry, I feel like I've detoured off your question, but a lot of people actually said that during their recovery or in hindsight they could have done this during their recovery, was actually using it as an emotional regulation strategy during times that were really tough. So whether that's around meal times, so before, during or after, it's simply introducing nature in really basic ways. So even if you might not want to go and sit out in your garden and have your snack or eat your meal, but even if you, for example, like I was just saying, putting your earphones in and having the sounds of birds, or maybe having the sounds of waves crashing, whatever you like, having that in when you are going through those tricky times can almost bring you down. I remember one person in the interview spoke about, she lit a candle that smelt of pine during her meals, because that was associated with like really comforting memories for her, but also it really brought her and regulated her emotions and brought her down. So it's really simple things like that. It doesn't even need to be direct exposure to nature. Like, there's so much research out there that actually those indirect ways, whether it's doing a visualization, looking at pictures, there's even research out there of viewing pictures of nature can help with body appreciation. So it doesn't need to be like these grand, I mean, absolutely amazing if you can go to places like Yosemite, but what my intervention is really focused on is these simple activities that people can bring in. And it's very much like, if you don't want to go outside today, here's a version that you can do indoors. So there's loads and loads of different activities like that. Yeah, there was a few other benefits. I don't know if you wanted me to like talk more at them,
please.
So one of the big ones was emotion regulation, which I've just touched upon. Another really interesting one is positive body image. So what I was saying before about the meaning pathway and how you can use sort of nature symbolism and nature metaphors, it was really interesting to hear people in the interview speak about how they drew on them during their disordered eating recovery, and specifically to do with their body image and how that was really helpful during their recovery, and also how they've sort of keep drawing on that now. So they keep going back to that, those sort of visualizations. And this actually is, there's quite a lot of literature on this as well. So it was nice to see this is becoming like something that that is being repeated in the literature and my research. So it is, I'm going to try and bring it into my intervention. So it's simply things like that nature is different shapes and sizes, but we put absolutely no judgment on that. And everything is there and it serves a purpose and we accept it how it is. And once we start to think, actually, ourselves, our bodies, we're all part of nature, because we are part of nature, we can start then to mirror that way of thinking onto ourselves. And one girl said that her mum brought this up to her during her recovery, and sort of said, like, a pine tree never tries to be a fir tree never tries to be an oak tree, everything is different and everything needs to be in this earth to keep it going round. And she said that that was so much more powerful than if she used different actresses or something like that. Like, it was just a neutral thing to draw on. But that's come up a lot in things like the beauty of imperfection in nature, the fact that our body does, that nature goes through natural cycles. I try and live seasonally now, so the fact that when we should be resting at the moment because we are becoming we should be hibernating like nature, but just starting to recognize that we are part of nature and that we should be starting to view ourselves in that way. Nature metaphors are something that I'm trying to bring into my intervention. But as well as that, people said that actually being in nature versus other settings where society is really heightened, and feeling actually like this sense of belonging and lack of judgment, and that nature does just completely accept you how you are, really allowed people just to be, and just to be themselves, and just to accept themselves and not feel like they have to show up in a certain way. There's such lack of judgment in nature. So that was another way as well. And then there's other ways, like the fact that when we're in nature, we can actually start to appreciate our body's functions and what we're capable of doing more. So things like gardening, things like slow activities like walking, but also, like I was speaking about, our senses and the fact that our body allows us to have these amazing sensory experiences, and that that's something that we should be appreciating and grateful for. So yeah, but a positive body image, which I didn't think it would come up very much before the project, but actually it's amazing to see how that nature connection can help with that side of things as well.
Yeah, I think when you were talking about the body image thing, I kind of was thinking about my trip away, and my body image really improved actually when I was away.
Yeah.
And I reflected on that when I came back. And I think one thing that definitely stood out for me was that when you're a part of nature, you are such a small part.
Yes.
And I think when you're like going around in day-to-day life and you're stressed and things like that, you feel like the biggest thing because you're the one kind of navigating the stress or navigating the day or what have you.
Yeah.
But being within nature, just it kind of brought me back down to earth, I guess.
Yeah.
Of like, I am actually just a small piece of this puzzle.
Yeah.
And the main focus was no longer on me. The main focus was on the scenery or the birds that are around me or, you know, the trail that you're on. And so I just wasn't so fixated on what I felt like and how I looked because I was so blown away by what was around me.
Yeah.
And I think that definitely I found, you know, on walks around the UK as well, like if I go on a walk, I will always try and kind of look at the flowers or, you know, connect with something. And I think it's that aspect of rather than fixating on my body and the way that I look or the way that I feel, I'm focusing on something else. And so that kind of, that fixation on how I look is taken away.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think as well, it's that perspective taking, isn't it? So that you realize that you are just a small part of this wider, amazing thing.
Yeah.
And that actually the things that you're worrying about in your daily lives aren't everything. So it almost puts things into perspective, doesn't it? And it makes you realize that actually there is so much more out there than what's going on in here. And that was one of the most one of the things people spoke about the most, like nearly everybody in the people I interviewed said that it was just that absolute perspective taking of actually my concerns aren't everything, there's so much more out there, and actually my concerns are stopping me experiencing these incredible things like you've just spoken about. So people refer to like nature making them feel a lot of freedom. And actually that it was like when they went into nature during their recovery, there was this like glimpse of freedom that they felt that they didn't want to be taken away from them. And it was almost like the disordered eating was doing that. And that was spurring them on to recover more, because this is what I could feel if I was recovered. I would allow myself to experience things like this. So I think that was really interesting as well.
Yeah. And I know I keep like going on anecdotally, but that just speaks volumes to me as well, because I think I mentioned this when we first spoke, but when I was very ill, which, you know, every activity outdoors the focus would be on burning calories or exercising.
Yeah.
There was no sort of connection with anything. And my mum would be like, oh, like, why don't we like look at this plant or whatever? But we don't have time. Like every second we need to be exercising.
Mm.
And I now, that's a red flag for me when if my mum says, because my mum's quote that she lives by is always stop and smell the roses.
Aww.
And if she says like, oh, let's go smell that one, and I'm like, no, we've not got time, I'm like, I think there's an issue here. Because I think that then gives me a moment to pause, and whether it's the act of actually looking at the rose or just being like, okay, that's initiated something to connect, and I'm not in a place where I want to connect,
then be present,
that space to be like, oh, I think something's going on.
Yeah, exactly. And that's one of the things that's quite tricky about natural spaces with when you are experiencing disordered eating, is that it can be this place that is where you go and you do try and get X number of steps in, burn X. It's a place that manifests, and everything that we've been speaking about can almost be, even though it's immensely hard, I'm not taking away from that, but even if you can, when you're on your walk, think, oh, I'm actually going to try and spot three things while I'm out on this walk that I think are beautiful, or I think that really grab my attention, and just giving yourself the space to be like, okay, I'm going to get my phone out and take a picture of that. So then it just stops that, it just makes you present for a moment, which is insanely hard, but each time you do that, it gets a bit easier. And it can be a way then to start to break that association as well. I think
you've made quite a good point there, because, and it made me think about it earlier when you were saying, you know, you don't have to go outside to exercise. Like, you can just go outside and sit in your garden or what have you.
Yeah.
And I think that that could potentially be an area where, you know, if somebody is struggling with an eating disorder or excessive exercise, that they could use, I need to get outside because I need to connect with nature, as almost like an excuse because they actually want to exercise. But I think that's like a really interesting point of, like, you don't have to move. And so if you're struggling when you go outside and you want to walk, whereas if someone said to you, well, why don't we just stand and look at this plant? Like, that could also be a really good way to be like, is everything okay right now? Because you seem to be on a drive to go and exercise rather than, you know, focus in and connect here.
Yeah, exactly. And that's something that when I've been designing the intervention, I've been really conscious that I want all of the activities to be things that can be done sat down or low activity, because otherwise it could be something that give people the excuse to be like, okay, well, I need to. And also what comes in there is like not needing to travel to like an amazing natural space, because that can also be a way to be like, okay, well, then I'll just go and walk there. And but actually it's not about that at all. It's about the engagement and the connection, which can be done anywhere. Like, even if you didn't want to leave the house for the whole day, like, you can connect with nature in different ways. So it's exactly like you're saying, it's understanding where the motivation is can say a lot, can't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I don't know whether you're allowed to talk about it or whether you have to wait until you finish your PhD, but are you allowed to tell us anything about the intervention that you've put together?
So I'm very early, I can say, so I'm very early in the process. So I have put together like a first version of the intervention, but it's very early days, and I'm hoping, I've got another study which is going to help with the development before I finish the project, and then I really would love to carry on this project after my PhD, so I can create this fully fledged intervention that can be used in services or wherever people would like to use it. But currently, so as I said, this has been informed, a lot of work has gone into this. So it's been informed by all of the interviews that I've done with people with lived experience. I've run focus groups with disordered eating professionals as well. I've run workshops with nature-based practitioners. I've looked at the literature around sort of current disordered eating interventions, current nature connection interventions, and the small amount of literature on how nature helps people with disordered eating. So a lot has gone into it. And we're now at the point, where we have sort of a first version. So the intervention, how I've made it, and I do want to say that all that work that I've done up until now, like reviewing the literature and interviewing people and doing the focus groups, that provides people with a lot of information on how nature and nature connection can help people while they're recovering from disordered eating, and that can be used in lots of different ways, and lots of different interventions can be created out of that. But the way that we're doing it is going to be a self-led intervention, a digital intervention that starts with some education on what nature connection is, going into those five pathways, and then introducing people to a choice of nature connection activities on a weekly basis that people can do in their everyday lives. This is like really simple things that we've spoken about. So these have all been designed based on the five pathways, but also the specific benefits. I've literally touched on a couple today. There's so many and they're all so exciting. So I very much designed them specifically for how they can help people with disordered eating. The choice is in there so that people, like we've said, depends on people's level of access to nature, but also how people are feeling. So some people might get up and just not want to go into it, even outside that day. So there's activities that can be done for when people are inside. It can be done anywhere, your garden, close to home. But also there's choice in there because what people are dealing with fluctuates between individuals, but it also fluctuates within people on like a daily or hourly basis. So the main thing that I wanted this to be is choice, and that's what we're hoping to get to. So there's going to be like a whole host of activities that people can choose.
Yeah, I think that's amazing. And I think, like you say, it's great to have the diversity of things, because like you say, you know, everyone's different, so they're probably going to enjoy different things, but equally, hour by hour, day by day, people will change. And you might not have an answer to this question, but I guess I'm just kind of intrigued to see if there's any research or what your perspective might be. But some days I don't feel like going outside.
Yeah.
And I feel like utter shite.
Yeah.
I don't want to go outside.
Yeah, exactly. But
I pull my socks up, I put my shoes on, and I go outside, and I then feel so much better. Do you think that's the case, that like you should always, you know, just grin and bear it, even if it's going and stepping out into your garden, connecting will help? Yeah. Or is that a bit tough on people?
I think what's really important is that we meet people where they are, and if people feel like you have to go outside, like that's going to put you off engaging full stop, isn't it? And you would never want to do that. So I think that even if you can't get outside that day, like, it's life, be compassionate with yourself. Everybody feels like that, so there are ways that you can engage inside. And like I was saying earlier, there is research out there that shows that virtual nature does have benefit. So it's absolutely, if that's all you can do that day, that's all you can do that day. And also thinking about level of risk as well. I mean, people with really severe symptoms physically, it might not be possible for people to leave the house for X, Y, and Z. So I think it's taking that into account as well, and thinking about that. But like I said, the way that you engage with nature doesn't need to involve any activity. So it is low risk. It can simply be stepping outside and looking around you and feeling the different sensory experiences. But I think the ideal is to get out in nature, but that shouldn't put you off not engaging at all, because there is still benefit on doing it indoors. Because I'm sat here now and I'm looking out at trees, and that would be the same as me if I went outside. So it's just, it's better to do whatever you can do that day. That's what I really want to foster through this intervention, is that it's meeting people where they are, and it's welcoming everybody in, and it doesn't matter where you are and how bad you're feeling that day. Just be compassionate with yourself and do what you can.
Yeah, and that was kind of what I was hoping you were going
to say. Good.
Because I think that one thing, like, I definitely find within people that have eating disorders is that, you know, they're hard on themselves. Yeah. And if they don't do things the way that they think they should do them, or that they told that they should do them, then they can be... Sorry, I have to blow my nose.
Sorry.
Yeah, they can be tough on themselves. So I think, you know, the fact that you've created this intervention where there's so many options, there's so much diversity in terms of the things that people can have access to, but equally, you know, saying to people, have compassion for yourself. And if one day getting outside isn't something that's possible, and all you could do that day is sit on the sofa, then pop some David Attenborough on the TV. Like, the amount of times I've watched David Attenborough when I've been feeling low, and, you know, that exactly. just, it absolutely takes you to a, even if it doesn't take you to a happy place, you know, hopefully it can give you something more. And something I've just thought about as well, actually, that I didn't think about before, that maybe was another reason you found why body image was improved, is that when we're thinking about nature, there's no one to compare to. Exactly. Whereas, like, I often find if I feel crap and I put like some crappy TV program on, all I'm doing is comparing my body to the body on the TV. Yeah. Whereas if it's like cute little dolphins or, you know, monkeys in a forest, I physically cannot compare my body to them.
Exactly. Yeah. There's an element of kind of what I was saying before, I think, about being removed from these ways that we can place judgment on ourselves, whether that's other people, whether that's mirrors. There's an element of that. But I think there's also the element of those dolphins, for example, wouldn't wouldn't judge you. Like, animals in nature don't judge you. Everybody, they accept you for what they are and for what you are, and nature does that as well. And I think that's what's so lovely, is it's a space that you can feel so held and not judged and able just to be. Because that's just so hard, like, with our whole life, like, everything now is just social media, TV, absolutely everything is always comparison and judgment. And I think that's what's so lovely about nature, is that just all slips away when you're in those natural settings, because you belong in nature and nature can hold you and not judge you at all. So I think, yeah, there's definitely an element of that in there as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's really beautiful. You know, the fact, maybe for some other people, the issue of never feeling like they belong or fit in or what have you, like, as you said, nature accepts you as you are. There's no judgment. You don't have to explain anything. I honestly think that the work that you've been doing, Mia, is wonderful, and it's such such a fresh approach rather than like some new therapeutic model. I feel like this, with the therapeutic models, obviously they have their place and they can be brilliant, but they often, you know, they're not for everybody. Whereas this, I think, is so diverse in the fact that everyone has a connection with nature that could look different for anybody. But, you know, finding that is something that's really easily accessible for you.
Yeah.
You don't have to sit down with a therapist to be able to kind of get in touch with that. And it's something that you can also take away with you from your recovery as well. So I think it's really powerful.
Yeah, that's why I love it as well, because it is that, it's really empowering, I think. I think a lot of approaches now is, you hear this, you get to the end of it, and then it's almost like the end of treatment, and then you feel like, oh, what's next? But with nature, it's such a constant, and I think it's so accessible, it's such a constant, and it can give people that power back. Like, you have the control is in your hands. Like, you can go out and do this whenever you want, whenever you feel able. And that's why I love this so much as well, because I think that is so needed, especially for people with disorders as well, because a lot of control is stripped away and it can give you a bit of that control back. So I think, it's a brilliant way. And I think it's also a brilliant complementary approach as well. Like, I'm not saying that this might not be the only thing that people use, but it can be something alongside other forms of treatment as well. So,
Honestly, like, I think it's amazing what you're doing, and I'm really grateful that I got to speak to you. Mm-hmm. Where can people go to get in contact with you if they want to find out more about your work, or maybe think about integrating it into their practice?
Yeah, so I'm on LinkedIn, Mia Morgan, and also X, Mia Morgan 1997. But I was going to say, if anybody would like to drop me an email about anything, I don't know if you can put the email in like the bio or whatever. Then please do so, because I'm at the point now where I'm nearly finishing the project, and then hopefully I'm going to write all of this work up and publish it, and also publish it in sort of digestible ways, so not just journal articles, but I'd love to make some sort of accessible resources that people can use, because like I said, I've done a lot of work around how nature can help people, and I would love people to be able to adopt and use that in different settings and in different services. So watch this space. But I also wanted to say that, like I've been saying, I'm very early in the intervention development, but the next and final study of my PhD is where I'm actually going to run a very scaled back version of the intervention. So it's going to be sort of, I don't want to say too much because I still have a long way to get to it, but it's going to be pretty much some of the activities, and we're going to trial these to get people's thoughts on how they found it and start to look at some of the effects of those. So if you are currently experiencing disordered eating and you would like to get involved in that, I know it's early days because this isn't going to be till early 2025, but do drop me an email, because that is going to be coming up, and that's really exciting because that's a way that people can start to trial part of the intervention. It's not the full one, but it's almost a scaled back version, so we can start to understand how these activities, if and how these activities are affecting people during this time. So and then hopefully, if depending on the results of that study, there will then be a set of activities that people can use in their practice however they would like to. So watch the space for that as well. But I'm excited that I've actually been able to test some of these activities out and see what they can do.
Yeah, no, that's awesome that you're kind of having that as part of your PhD to then say, you know, this is the kind of test that we did, and now to take that further, you know. So good luck with all of that.
Thanks.
And I'll put your email and everything in the notes for people to contact
Perfect.
You.
Thank you.
So yeah, thank you so much, Mia. It's been so lovely to chat to you.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It's been great.
If you enjoyed listening today, you won't want to miss next week's episode, so be sure to subscribe. Eating disorders are crippling illnesses, but with the right support, they can be recovered from. We really hope you enjoyed this episode, but if you require more support right now, please look into charities such as First Steps and Beat for support, or talk to someone you trust.